Hello, and thank you for listening to the Total Health Podcast. My name is Rosie Piercy. I'm a chiropractor and clinic director, and I find the subject of health fascinating. In this podcast, every fortnight, we'll be discussing health from a different perspective. I hope you enjoy. Hi, my name's Rosie from Total Health Podcast, and today I'm here with Mel Harrison from Mel Harrison Osteopathy. Mel, it's lovely to have you here.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Exactly. It's all fun, isn't it? So Mel and I work together at Total Health West Berkshire, and you also work in a couple of other places, is it?
Or... Yeah, so I'm at the Natural Health Centre as well in Wash Common.
Okay, in Newbury, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, right, so a few questions for you here, Mel, just to tell the listeners about what you do. So you're an osteopath.
Yeah.
Why did you decide on osteopathy as a career for you?
I was always quite sporty as a teenager when I was at school, and I played a lot of lacrosse, and I was very interested in injuries, and it was always something that I kind of wanted to do. I kind of went down the physio route at first, and then we went on a school trip to Newbury College, and I met an osteopath there, and it sounded a lot cooler than being a physio, so I decided on that.
I think that's a similar thing as to why I went into chiropractic. And also, when I was qualifying, or deciding my A-levels, and this is going back quite a long time now, about 20 years ago, the grades to get into physio were the same as medicine?
Yeah, you needed all A's, because there's a lot less jobs, and yeah, it kind of put me off.
Yeah, and I was just like, I don't get that. Obviously, because, you know, training to be a chiropractor, osteopath, physio, it's all similar stuff you're learning, isn't
it?
And
yeah,
I was like, why do you need such... I think it's just competition for place, wasn't
it?
Yeah,
definitely.
Because, yeah, I was never going to get free A's at A level.
Yeah, me neither. I think, and the good thing about osteopathy was you needed an interview to get in, and I'm a lot better with people than I am my grades. So I think that's what got me in.
Yeah, when I was the ACC, which is, for those who don't know, the Anglo-European College of Chiropractic, although I think it's just changed its name, so I think it's at the ACC, no, I don't know what it's called now. It'll always be the ACC to me, though, where I trained to be a chiropractor. They had, like, you had to interview as well, because they took an awful lot of, I guess, mature students.
Yeah.
Sort of second career. And so they would get in more on their interview.
Yeah. You need to be a people person as well for this job. So if you're not very good with people, then there's no chance.
But they say that sometimes the people who graduate top don't always end up being the best sort of chiropractor or osteopath, because it's for social skills,
yeah,
isn't
definitely.
It?
Yeah, definitely. You've got to get them to trust you.
Obviously, you've got to have the brain power to learn all the stuff, so you know what you're doing.
You need a bit of both.
You do, yes. A good mix is always helpful. What do you treat as an osteopath?
We have a go at anything, really, but main things we're known for is kind of non-specific back pain, neck pains, whiplash-type disorders. We also like chronic pain problems, so osteoarthritis, fibromyalgia.
Okay.
Can have a go at anything, really.
Yes. I find often people come to me and they've been to their GP, they've done this, they've done that, and then they're almost like,
you're my last help, come
and help me.
And just because we look at the body, we spend longer with people for a start than you can at a GP, unfortunately, nowadays, and, you know... Yeah. Everything links, so
we're lucky that we've got that time, isn't it? And we can choose how much time to. I don't know, because you work for yourself, don't you? And same idea. And one of the things I love about that is that you can decide, actually, this patient needs some more time, and you can just decide to spend more time with them. You're not pigeonholed into the limited time you have available.
10 minutes that unfortunately GPs have to stick to.
I'm sure sometimes they'd like a bit more time.
I'm sure they would. Yeah. Unfortunately, it's not the case.
So do you have an ideal patient that you treat, or?
I really enjoy the structural side of things. So osteopathy, you can go down whatever route you want, really, because we learn quite holistically. But I really enjoy quite structural injuries. So I like people that come in when they're...
What do you mean by structural for listeners who are not...
So it's kind of back pains that are all to do with like the feet, the knees, and how it's all kind of stemmed
like
from different areas. Yeah,
way of looking at it.
Yeah, like an engineering kind of way of looking. So that muscle's out, that joint's out, and how it all links with every part of the body. So.
And that's that kind of thing that people come in and go, oh, you know, I don't know if you might have neck pain, but you end up looking at their low back because I don't know if you've had some of the people who've had neck pain because they can't turn the low back, so they're constantly turning their neck.
Yeah. Like a detective.
Yes, it is like being a detective. I interviewed a podcast a few episodes ago, a guy called Ben Frederick, and he was saying it's like being a detective
as well, that kind
of hunting out what's causing the problem rather than where the pain is, because they're often two different places, aren't they?
Yeah, so they're my favourite kind of things to treat, rather than like people coming in with a specific like disease or something that needs just maintenance. I like a challenge.
And so things like fibromyalgia, that's something that personally, I know chiropractic can treat it, but
yeah,
again, the joys of being working for yourself is I know personally that I don't find I help people like that.
Yeah, I mean, there's no cure for fibromyalgia, no. But I know I've treated a few patients, especially in my old job in Basingstoke, who've had it, and you know, even if they just get a few weeks relief, it's something.
That's quite a lot when you've got fibromyalgia, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think sometimes some people treat those kind of conditions better than others. I know I have a friend who treats fibromyalgia and she's a chiropractor. And
yeah.
It works really well for her and I've tried it and it just doesn't...
I think it depends what your passion is. Because, for example, osteopathy, a big chunk of it is cranial osteopathy with babies. And, before I had my own baby, I was a little bit terrified of them, so I didn't really enjoy it. So I don't really like treating them that much, but I will.
Yeah. See, I'm the same. I have no interest in treating babies.
Yeah.
Enough
of it at home.
It's like your interest, isn't it? I know some people, their whole clinic is paediatrics and pregnancy and children, and I just don't have any desire to treat babies. I always just refer them out.
Yeah.
And also, I think it's that thing, particularly with babies, is they're not just small adults, are they? No, you have to treat them differently.
Yeah. They can't tell you what's wrong, and then they just cry on you. And when it's not your own child, you'll be like, oh, I don't know what to do.
And it's different techniques as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I just think, because I don't do so little of it, I'd rather not do any of it at all, because I'm not practiced in it. But pregnancy, happily treat pregnancy all day long. And children when they can start talking to me.
That's very true.
5-6-year-olds happy with that. I don't see many, but then
they're just ticklish though, aren't they? So yeah. It's still hard to treat them.
No, it just tickles. But thankfully you don't see many of those because they're usually quite well at that age. So I guess the question I often get asked, and I imagine you must get asked all the time, is what's the difference between osteopathy, chiropractic and physio?
Okay. Well, we're probably closer to chiropractic than physio.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So physio, I tend to say to people, is more kind of rehab from a sports injury or like a post-surgery. They tend to look a lot more muscular than we do.
Yeah.
Whereas,
I think they have an active-passive system.
Yeah.
Which I've never thought in. It's a different way, I'm not sure if it's a different way of thinking or a different way of being taught it.
Yeah.
I remember talking to a physio and they were saying, you have active-passive. And I just never even heard.
Yeah.
And I was like, what?
Well, yeah.
And I think they thought I was a bit silly or something, but I've never heard it. I guess active is muscles and passive is skeletal or something like that. I don't know.
No idea.
But I've never heard it, the body or the way it works described
is
in
that. Yeah.
Obviously, the words active and passive, I know, but in terms of descriptions of how things work, I've always looked much more integrated, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. And that's why I think chiropractic and osteopaths are more similar. And you know, physio is, I think, a lot more exercise-based as well, whereas, I give exercises, but not compared to what a physio does.
I think, and also things like stroke rehab and that kind of stuff, I wouldn't even start with that. That's very much not
done
my
very
thing.
Basic, we're more non-specific problems, aren't we? Whereas osteopath chiropractic, you might disagree with me here, but osteopaths, we kind of look a lot more at general health. So we treat people who, for example, asthmatics.
Yeah.
So how that affects their rib cage and upper back. So our case history, we go through a lot of medical questions, constipation, because sometimes that relates.
I think we probably ask similar questions. I've treated people like their upper back and their asthma's got better.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say that I could treat it anything like that, and probably wouldn't either. You might.
I obviously can't treat asthma as well. It's the same thing as fibromyalgia, but. Yeah, you would look at a lot more the rib cage and mechanics of the breathing and I don't know, we cross over quite a lot.
It's so tricky because when people ask, because there's so many more similarities between us.
Yeah, I think we're just taught slightly differently. Yeah. I think as osteopathy, we're taught a lot more, start with general health and then work out.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, are you more spinal and go the other way? I don't know.
Probably more spinal, go the other way. But I think we both look holistically at everything, don't we? And because, we take probably the same as you. We've got very similar new patient forms, haven't we?
Yeah,
we could probably use each other's forms.
Yeah.
You know, health and what's wrong with your problem. You know, what's your problem? And then also, what's your health generally? And and I don't know if you find the same, that lifestyle comes into it a lot, you know. And I seem to spend a lot of time talking to people about what they do.
Yeah.
And often I found...
Day-to-day.
Day-to-day life.
Sitting at a desk.
Yeah, and what do they do with their hobbies? And sometimes I find that I spend quite a lot of time talking to someone about something that may seem completely off case, so to speak, but actually then it's
really related.
So you've spent, I don't know, the past 3 weeks swinging a four-year-old around. Yeah. Maybe that's why your arm hurts. Yeah. But actually, in general questioning,
nothing, that doesn't come up.
That hasn't come up at all. Yeah. But I guess that's also the joy, as we were saying earlier, being able to spend more time.
Yeah, we can fish.
Fish more. And sometimes that kind of thing doesn't come out for several treatments.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember my one of my lecturers told me once that he was treating someone, I think she was a receptionist, for many, 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 many years for neck pain. And he said, it's something you're doing. And they spent ages working out and they couldn't find it. And one day she sat at her desk and the door opened and she turned her head and she realised there was a bell on the door. And every time the door open, she turned her head slightly.
Yeah.
But she was doing that 100 times a day or something. Yeah. So she just literally angled her desk around. So she was basically, it was that action. I mean, I don't know if it went completely, because obviously there would have been muscle imbalances and what have you built up over that time. But it can be something that daft, can't it?
Yeah, yeah. No, one of my regular patients, she's probably going to listen to this now, I've been treating her on and off for about 2 years or so. And she was just getting this hip problem. And I treated it and it got a lot better, but it just never 100% went, and I said, well, this must be something, and she had no idea, and it's been about 18 months probably since I said that. She came in last minute, she goes, I know what it is. She said it's her slippers. She was had slip-on slippers, and she was clenching her thighs as she was walking, and she changed her slippers, and it's all gone. So, like I said, it's something as simple as that.
But it's amazing how that, I often find that, do you find that in the summer, when, well, women particularly go into sandals that haven't got a strap on the front, and their toes start gripping.
Yeah.
A lot of sort of anterior leg pain, isn't it? Sort of
cramp,
and I guess it'd be like almost a shin splint type injury, isn't it? Yeah. But that kind of thing.
Just from sandals, incredible.
Yeah, it is. I was like, it's just sandals. And I was like, no, it isn't.
Yeah,
it is. But and I suppose with physio, there's a lot more NHS based, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely. Whereas, there's a few osteopaths in the NHS, but not many.
I think there's a few chiropractors. I think there's I think there's some down in Hampshire, North Hampshire.
Yeah.
And I was asked to go in locum when I was about 6 months pregnant. And I was just like, I can barely run my own clinic, let alone have the energy to go and do anyone else's. But unfortunately, because it sounds like a good project.
Yeah, definitely.
But I don't know if there'll ever be any more NHS physio or...
One of the reasons I went into osteopathy, though, is because I wanted to be private. Yeah. So
you have more control, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Like you said, you can treat them for as long as you want and...
Yeah.
Forth and
yeah, you're not limited by a certain number of visits. Or,
yeah.
But I guess also with NHS is that you'd be more vulnerable to funding changes and things like that,
yeah,
wouldn't you?
Yeah, definitely.
And then you'd have to build your private practice back up again.
Yeah, I mean, private practice is hard to get going and whatever, but it's been worth it, I think.
No, it's fun.
Until you go on maternity leave and then you've got to start from the bottom again.
To say to listeners, we both recently had babies. Well, I've had two babies and Mel's on one at the moment. And we were saying off mic earlier that it's so hard when you as a, I guess, more for the woman perhaps when you have a family than if you're a male chiro or osteopath taking time out for paternity leave is you have to take some time out.
Yeah, I have to.
I mean, I do know people who've gone back after a month. I don't think I could have gone back.
I went back part-time after 4.5 months, just Wednesday and Saturday, and I was busy then because all my regulars came back, but then as I've gone back to 5 days, it's gone quiet. But it's this time of year as well, I think.
Yeah, because we're recording this in April, but it's we've had a very long winter this winter, haven't we? Yeah. It feels more like
no
February.
Gardeners hurting their backs.
And no one going out to do their exercise and realise they can't do it because that injury they had in November is still there. But yes, it does take time to, I mean, recover from maternity leave and time off, doesn't it? That's the sort of downside of private practice.
Yes.
I think my first, I had 3 months off and went back part-time after that. But I was in a clinic where the other chiropractors had just absorbed my patients, and so it was much easier for them to come back to me because they hadn't gone anywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
But when I went off after having my second child and I had 5 months off, it was much more difficult because everyone had just dispersed. You know, and people do come back.
I mean, most of everyone loses a few, I think. Yeah. But I think most of my regulars come back, but it's still affected it a little bit. It's still gone quiet.
Yeah, but but it builds back up.
Yeah, and definitely. It's built up already. It's
bizarre when you've worked so hard, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think I don't know if you find this when you're talking to patients who are pregnant in whatever job they do, is that you're busy having one life.
Yeah.
And then you're starting a new life when you have a baby, but you want your professional life to carry on. And
it's
very hard, isn't it, to balance it?
Yeah, definitely.
Balance it all. Yes, it's the joys of being a mum, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great.
It's lovely, but it's a balancing act, as many people
want. Hardest job, but the best job, as they will say.
Yes, that's true, probably. Yes. Although this, yeah.
Don't agree with it at 3 a.m. though.
No. No, 3 a.m. is not my best time at all. So I was told that, and you'll tell me if this is true or not, that osteopathy and chiropractic both came about from the same two people in Davenport. Yes. And they were friends and fell out.
Yes.
Is that an osteopath side true as well?
I don't know too much about the chiropractic side, but Andrew Taylor still was the guy that discovered osteopathy and invented it.
D.D. Palmer was chiropractic, yeah. And they lived only 11 miles apart or something.
Yeah,
like.
I think didn't the founder of chiropractic train as an osteopath, but then changed it all up and then...
I don't know. The only thing I know is that he... Well, the story goes, and this is very much chiropractic history, I guess, is that he was into magnetic healing and crystal healing. Because we're going back, this is 1895, so quite a way back. And his gardener fell off a ladder or something and lost his hearing.
Oh, wow.
And so he palpated his spine and decided to adjust him somehow. And his hearing came back, and then that was what got him into it.
Okay.
That's the only thing I know. I have no idea.
Well, Andrew Taylor Stills, his son, I think it was son, maybe daughter, died of, again, I think it's meningitis.
Mm.
And I think that's what got him... going like something, like way of curing or something. That's why he went into osteopathy.
Nice. So it's all very, and they were very, yeah. I mean, I think
something happened in their life and it,
But in fact, they worked so closely together and then fell out or something.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we would only have one thing and then we wouldn't have to answer the question, what's the difference? Because it'd be the same. But chiropractors are quite into their x-rays because obviously x-rays.
Yeah, and you use a lot more equipment, don't you, compared to
Well, we love a gadget.
Yeah, you love a gadget, whereas we tend to use our hands, but then we burn out quickly, I think.
Because we have activators, which is a little, how do I describe an activator?
It looks like a gun. But
it does look like a gun, but not, that makes it sound dreadful, but it applies a pressure to a joint, so there is a whole activator technique that's just done by checking things and activating. Yeah. I tend to use it on small joints, or... people like little old ladies that you really wouldn't want to put a proper thoracic, which is upper back, adjustment through, then I would use an activator or ribs or things like that. That's how I tend to use it personally.
Okay.
And our bench is a bit different.
It's very different. Your bench kind of scares me a little bit.
Yeah, it's very comfortable. Everyone looks at it like it's really scary, but it's because it's got drop pieces in, so we lift up bits of the table and push through them with the patient on, which adjust the joints in different ways. But so I guess that's one major difference, isn't it?
Yeah.
We tend to have more bits, but I think probably, I don't know, because you do side posture adjustments, I think, is that right? Or so they must be more or less similar, I would guess. I always think we should probably watch each other. But then I know that I've got chiropractic friends who do more sacral occipital technique, and if you put us next to each other, we would probably look like we weren't the same profession.
It's one of these things like once you graduate, you have to do continued development every year, and you can do whatever you want, really.
Yeah.
It's getting a bit more restricted now for osteopaths, but you can do whatever you want, really.
Yeah.
And so you just develop from what you learn. Mm. So there'll be osteopaths that do hundreds of manipulations, and then there'll be some that do none, and probably the same in chiropractic.
Exactly. And you go down the thing, whether you want to do more sports or more pregnancy or children, or I don't know.
The foundations of what we learn by and
exactly
how we look at things. It's just that's really what makes it different.
So I've got a friend who's really into the neurological side and that's of how that all works, or functional neurology, and she's lecturing on that now. It's really interesting how things diverges, isn't it, once you
because
I don't know if you have this. I've got friends, as I said, who treat very differently to me, or have a completely different understanding of what we do, and yet we've both come out of the same university in the same year, and I find that really, really odd.
Yeah.
Do you have
both kind of learn the same things, and then
but then it's gone.
Yeah, that's very true. Same, similar. One of the girls in our years went off to do neuro stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of them have gone down kind of horses and the horses.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. I always find that
I'm allergic to them, so I can't do it.
I just can't imagine adjusting a horse.
I know.
I know they do, and it works really well.
Yeah, they can't give you feedback as well.
No, but then it's the whole thing about vets, isn't it? You don't have any feedback.
Yeah.
When they're, I guess if it's a horse neighing, I don't. Yeah. This is how much I know about horses. Almost nothing.
Yeah.
Apart from they go neigh.
Yeah.
sorry, I forgot horse's name. Completely lost it. Yeah, because I've heard somewhere that some osteopaths do x-rays postgraduately, is that right?
Or I don't know of many, okay, yeah. I'm sure there are a few. But
I mean, admittedly, I don't take x-rays anymore. I haven't taken an x-ray for years, because you might as well MRI. Do you find that?
I just find that if I think it's something, the cause for to be x-rayed, I'll refer on, because I'm not going to treat them if they're fractured. But then at the same time, I think you use them more for postural kind of things. But
yeah, I think some chiropractors do. I think this is where chiropractic has this massive split in the profession.
Yeah.
Is
there's two extremes of chiropractic.
There are, and many bits in between. Is that I would only x-ray if I was suspecting something that would rule out treatment. Or I think what maybe chiropractic traditionally used it for was to look and go, oh, look, there, that big osteophyte or that big bone thing, that's your problem.
Yeah.
And patients love that.
Yeah.
But I think more and more people are going, actually, there's kind of, what are you going to do about it anyway?
Exactly.
You know, and so that's the only reason I ever
get diagnosis, but if it's something like, I give it a go for a few weeks, and if it's not changing, I know it's not something that I can help with, so I refer. So.
Yeah, and I think that, well, I worked at a clinic where we had x-ray, and we got rid of it in the end, because we just didn't take any x-rays, because it kind of like, well, it's not going to change my treatment plans, there's no point x-raying.
Yeah.
And if it is something that I think is maybe a bit nasty, a bit sinister, then I'm going to send them off to the GP because I want them to have the x-ray.
Yeah.
Because you can't give the x-ray away, you've got to keep it.
Yeah.
And if not, I might as well MRI, because the cost of a private MRI, particularly if you go somewhere like Cheltenham, is not that much more than an x-ray. And you get obviously much more detail on the MRI about the disc and the nerve, which is usually the bit you want to see anyway. Cause
yeah. I think a lot of people, though, I don't know if you find it, that people come to us kind of wanting an MRI.
Yeah, wanting an x-ray.
And, you know, 9 out of 10 people don't need an MRI. No. And, you know, it's something that I kind of have to tell a lot of people, I don't think you need an MRI, but if it comes to that stage, then maybe we'll consider one. But,
yeah, because you're saying, well, if you have an MRI, really the only thing they're going to do with that is consider whether
it's surgical.
Or maybe they might want to give you some injections or do something. And they're like, oh, I don't want any of that.
Yeah.
Well, then there's really no point. Because quite a lot of time you can do, like, you know, tests, straight leg raise, reflexes, that kind of stuff. And you can go, you've got a disc. You've got a disc. Or my favourite one is, I've had a few, do you know when you do well leg raise, and then you can say the disc is more central than lateral.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you say that and they go, I remember, and it was really you told me it was. Yes.
How much money did you spend?
It makes you feel like, oh, I do know what I'm talking about. But yeah, I don't find that many people actually need MRIs or things. But I can understand that need
to want to know what's wrong.
Or to see. People like to see what's wrong.
Yeah.
And I think that's why people like, when we used to take, people used to love having x-rays done.
Because,
you know, it's like, that's your problem. And people like that. But yeah, it's not really,
unfortunately, nowadays it's not that easy to get one to start with.
And also, it's kind of like, again, it's the whole, there's only the point of doing it if it's going to change your treatment plan. And if it's not, there's no point.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's my view on it. I know other chiropractors who x-ray much more than that. But obviously you have to have a justification.
Because
obviously x-raying is very highly regulated and controlled. You can't just do it just for the fun of it, because that's what they used to do. And then they found it wasn't good.
Yeah.
They used to have them in parties, didn't they, where you could put your hands under, you know, like when they were
X-ray
first
parties.
Invented. Yeah, you could literally put your hand under and see it moving. And then they realised that actually they were just irradiating people.
Yeah.
That wasn't very good. Good. What else was I going to ask you? I can't remember. So health tips. Do you have a particular health tip that you tend to give your patients? This is one of these questions I ask everyone.
Okay.
So what's the best health tip you've ever been given, do you think?
I've been given? Ooh. I think something that I've always agreed with and something I pass on to patients, and probably a way that I've learnt the hard way through going through pain, is how important your glute muscles are, which are the ones in your bottom. So they are the main stabilisers of the back, hip, and they link with everything. So they even link with your elbows. So I'm a big believer.
How do they link with your elbows? I know the listeners will want to know. Tell me.
Well, because your glutes stabilise your back, and so they go right up to the neck, and then as osteopaths, we believe that kind of elbow problems can stem from your neck. So if your glutes are weak, your whole
back's spine is
out
supported.
Of alignment. Yeah, your spine's not supported. Your muscles are all tightening in different places. That tightening can then lead to elbow pain, for example. So,
And that's that big whole detective thing, and the whole body's a machine, and it all loops together, isn't it? That kind
of. I know. I've treated so many people that have come in, and I go straight away, your glutes a week. That's it, pretty much. And, you know, tell them, give them a few exercises. You know,
so what exercises do people do generally? What do you give for glutes?
So my favourite one is getting them to lie on their side, keep the bottom leg down on the bed, top leg up, and then do little circle rotations.
Oh, that's hard work.
Yeah, it burns, but that burning's good because it means it's working. So
yeah, it's like do you do those clam ones that people give? I don't like those myself.
I give them more to people, like older people that can't hold their whole leg up, for example. But if people can hold their leg up, then I give them the little circles because it's hard, but it's good.
Oh, my bottom is actually hurting just at the thought of doing those exercises. Because I always found, I did Pilates for a while, and I always found that clams just wound my back up.
Yeah.
Like a treat, you know.
Okay.
And I could never, you know, I try not to treat my, do you know what I mean, mentally treat myself. Because it's not useful. But I was like, oh, why is that? What's wrong? Is my SI joint restricted? Is, you know, is something going on? Why does the clam exercise really wind my back up?
Because I find with me, if I don't do my glute strengthening, then that lower back and pelvis are just throbbing. Then as soon as I start doing
them,
that,
it works.
Then it gets better. Yeah.
Maybe I should do more. Almost certainly, I should do more glute exercises.
Yeah.
And so I then tend to ask people, you know, what's the best tip you give your patients? So is that to do your glute strengthening?
Do your glutes, and just do your exercises in general.
Do your exercises.
So many people don't do their exercises.
People don't tend to do their exercises, do they? It's really odd.
Yeah, okay, we can do 50% of it. We see, half an hour a week, we'll average. Yeah. So you've got to do the other 50%. And if you're not, then it's going to be a slow recovery. You might not fully recover if you don't get your glutes going, for example.
Exactly. Oh, I find that people do their exercises in their kind of like crisis time when they're in.
And then as soon as they get better, they stop. But the thing is, like some injuries, for example, you need to keep that strength going.
Particularly like, I don't know, I was always told like, you know, soft tissue healing time is 6 to 12 weeks.
Yeah.
Majority are going to be closer to 12 than they are going to be closer to 6.
Yeah.
And so then you need to keep doing things in that time. So
and like we were talking about earlier, finding out that trigger. If your trigger's been sat at your desk, you're going to go back to sitting at your desk. So you need to change something.
Exactly. I always say you don't go straight back into the same environment because it's just going
to
happen all over again.
Change.
And that's why often, I don't know if you find this with people, we've got little kids, you tend to see them quite a lot when their kids are little, and then the children get to 5 and they're not carrying them as much. And because even my 2.5-year-old, I still carry him quite a bit, not much because I can't. This is slightly off topic, but I often find really silly because my boys go out for a scoot or a walk with me and I'm taking a buggy for a walk.
Yeah.
Because most of the time my youngest won't need it and he'll get round the walk we're doing.
Yeah.
But if he stops halfway, he's too big for me to carry him anymore.
Let's hit the buggy.
So I have to hit the buggy so I can put him in it. Or put all the scooters in it when they decide they're not scooting anymore. Or the other day we had my eldest fell and he scraped his elbow and his knee and
Carry kind of first aid kit as well.
They're very dramatic. I've got blood. There's blood. And he'd be pushed in the buggy. But I think people think I'm silly because I'm there taking a buggy for a walk. But all the times I have had to carry, or when I've seen patients who've had to carry their child that is really too heavy for them to carry long distances.
Yeah.
They're wrecked by it.
Yeah.
I was wrecked. I had to carry him around. So now it's more common for half an hour when he gave up.
No, thank you.
My abs were like killing me for a week afterwards. My back was
surprised.
And so it's handy hints like that. Sorry, trying to get onto topic slightly. Is, you know, taking a pushchair might not need one. That kind of thing helps. Because I think we both give quite a lot of lifestyle advice as well as
definitely.
A top tip on glutes. It's things like, you know, take the buggy, get up from your desk, that kind of thing. So when you're treating, do you tend to treat people once a week? Or because chiropractors tend to do more twice a week, kind of thing.
Depends on the, like, if people come in and they're in acute pain, I often do about 2 a week.
Yeah.
But if they're semi-acute, then usually about once a week.
Yeah.
But kind of depends on the patient,
it
when
does.
They can come in.
Yeah.
I think.
Obviously, it's all very patient-dependent. I mean, I tend to do a course of treatment. Do you tend to do that rather than doing one-offs? Or how do you talk to patients about it?
I usually say on the first session that it's unlikely that it's going to get better after one session, and most people understand that. I like to see people at least 3 or 4 times, ideally. It doesn't always happen.
Mm.
They tend to come back, the ones that don't. and then I basically try and stem them out as long as I can. So if I feel like they can go a month, I leave it a month.
Yeah.
And then if they're fine after a month, I try 2 months.
Yeah.
And
Yeah, and then, I think that's similar.
Yeah, I try, like, everyone's different. Some people need to come in monthly. I try to get people to at least every 6 months, and ideally you should have a check anyway every 6 to 8 months anyway, because
things build up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the fact that they build up, I always say the pain's the last symptom you get. You get all the problems, and then the last thing you get is pain.
Yeah.
And that's when you come and...
And that's the whole one.
Because it's coming before you get the pain.
Yeah, because the pain signals to the brain, isn't it? And you need a certain number for your brain to trigger that is painful. So you could sit, I would say to the patient, you can sit at 99 out of 100 for months.
Yeah.
And that's when someone bends over and picks a pencil up and it kicks you up to 100 and then it's painful.
Yeah.
But you might not be aware of it. Or you might wear some stiffness or a bit of achiness or something like that.
And that's what I say to people. If you can't remember to come in every 6 months or whatever, look out for that stiffness, because that's a good time to come in.
Yeah. So I have had some patients, a colleague of mine had a patient who, he would get a cramp in his leg.
Yeah.
And if you get an appointment within a few days of that, then he wouldn't have a problem.
Yeah.
But if he didn't, then his back would just go.
Yeah.
And it's like his little kind of, you know, signal that this is when you need treatment. And
And usually when you get, if you come in early, you only need one, maybe two sessions and it's fine. Whereas if you wait to the pain, that's when you need six treatments.
Exactly. So people come in crawling on their hands and knees,
so,
and they're like,
really, financially it works out better to come out.
And you haven't got the pain and,
and
the time off work and also being in pain is miserable. And I don't know if you noticed this, particularly with men, when they're when they've had back problems for a while or neck problem, whatever, they come in and they're often, they haven't shaved and they're obviously, people when they're in pain, their face looks very different and their manner's very different. And then after a few treatments, you'll see them sitting in the waiting room and they're shaved and they're at work and they're on their clothes. And they look completely different because the pain's gone. And I think that's the thing about pain, isn't it? Is that it
wipes you out.
It does, and it affects everyone, doesn't it? Affects your family, means you can't go to work. I don't know if you find this, that people tend to be really emotionally affected by it.
Yeah, definitely.
Either the worry of it or...
Yeah.
Or where is it going to get worse?
That stress then brings on other things. So
exactly, it's all kind of very there's the kind of emotional component, which I don't know if now I'm getting, because I've been practicing for a while now. Are you more used to dealing with, or you get more attuned to, perhaps?
Yeah.
I don't know. The more grown up you get.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But that reassuring, isn't it?
Yeah, a lot of it is reassurance.
And I think a lot of people come in having read Google and diagnose themselves with some horrendous...
Do you find piriformis syndrome? Everyone's got piriformis syndrome.
Or brain tumours. A lot of people think if they've got pins and needles or something.
I don't
which
get that
for
much,
us is, you know, trap nerve, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
For them, it's brain tumour. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, some people obviously, it might be, but...
Not many.
Very, very rare. And, you know, something very tiny that, you know...
Yeah, but Dr. Google.
So, yeah,
mind
Dr.
you,
Google.
I'm just as bad. I'll let me Google it.
I remember studying every lesson we have in pathology. I was like, oh my gosh, I've got it.
I don't have that. Oh, I was feeling a bit lightheaded today. That must be what it is. But yeah, piriformis syndrome. Everyone's got piriformis syndrome. It's just like... You know.
I don't see many piriformis syndromes, really. What is true it? Piriformis.
So,
one at the moment. I've had one for a while.
No, so piriformis syndrome is where the sciatic nerve runs through the piriformis muscle, isn't it? And I think it's like 5% of the population, some 5-10. It's teeny, teeny, tiny. But you can get like a non-true piriformis syndrome where your piriformis is very tight and they irritate the sciatic nerve. But even that,
most
you don't...
Most of the time, it comes from your back, back.
But most of the time, it's just that your glutes and your piriformis are tight and your joints and your pelvis are restricted, and that's why you're getting the leg pain or what have you.
Yeah.
But everyone comes and goes, I've got piriformis. And they print it off for me as well. That's brilliant. Well, have a look. It might be. And often they're not wrong in a way that the piriformis is involved, but it's not
just
a syndrome.
Yeah,
and everyone likes the syndrome. But
A syndrome is basically just a collection of symptoms that they don't really know what the problem is.
It is. So
it's together.
It's a syndrome. because chiropractors, we love our sacroiliac joints, which is the joints at the back of the pelvis, aren't they? I guess is the easiest way to describe them. Do osteopaths love SIJs?
We love SIJs,
See, SIJs, this is the
sacroiliac joints, right?
Yeah, so I don't... Well, I've never heard of SI joints, which is exactly the same thing, completely the same thing, but it's interesting how what people talk about the same thing in a different language, which is what makes us, people think we have more differences than we have similarities, just from one little...
From one word.
Yeah, but...
Like we call them manipulations, you call them adjustments.
Yeah.
Like that, with the clicking things.
The clicking things, yes. Terribly technical, that. Yeah, completely. Yeah, so it's yeah, so we love our SI joints. Yeah. SIJs. Oh, okay, maybe I can get used to that. Yeah. Anyway, and the last question is, what's the worst habit that you have?
That I have?
Yeah, or...
Just to do the osteopathy in terms of...
No, just general life.
Oh, I do love a bit of chocolate, and I'm one of these people, I can't just have one, I have to have the entire bar.
Yeah, I'm a bit like that. I have to keep things like that out of the house.
I know. The thing is that if I don't have it in the house, I go out and get it so it's in the house, and then it's gone.
Then it's gone.
I have to do it again the next day.
Yeah, it's a weakness, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm worse on crisps. I'm worse on savoury things like that.
I'm sweet tooth.
Yeah,
definitely.
What's I going to say? So one of the things that... I think people may find strange from this whole conversation, it's obviously we get on, don't we?
Yeah,
and we've known each other for years.
Yeah.
Is that actually chiropractors and osteopaths and indeed physios can actually get on and work in the same place. Do you remember when we first met?
Yeah.
Was it George said, you two are sitting next to you, are you going to be all right? Because you're the same but different. And
you've got a reputation for hating each other,
but I think that's part of the reason why I've started the podcast, apart from I just find health really interesting.
Yeah,
is actually I think there's probably in all professions more things that unite us than are different.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's a good way of learning.
Yeah,
from each other.
I do feel a bit more hostility from some physios, though. I don't know
do
if you,
you
find it. Yeah, I don't know.
See, I've not spoken...
Maybe it's just me.
Oh, I doubt that. But I've not spoken to many physios. And we don't actually have a physio at Total Health at the moment, which would be cool, because then we'd have all three.
I always refer people to physios all the time, but I don't get many back, fortunately.
No, I know there's a few very good
physios. Like I said, maybe it's just me.
I know a very good physio, and you'd be who I saw myself, actually. Because and that's the thing about things... I mean, I had... pelvic girdle pain with both my pregnancies, and I had quite a lot of chiropractic treatment mostly because I was in a chiropractic clinic, and it's very easy to get treatment when you're working, but it only got me so far, like 95% better.
Yeah,
but I went to see a physio and had some work on, I had of course a C-section, some scar tissue work, and that was the final 5% that really got it better.
And that's why sometimes I refer a lot to physios, is especially because they're more trained in exercise therapy than we are.
I hate
and
rehab.
And sometimes I just, I don't really enjoy it.
I'll
refer on.
And I know what exercises to give people, but in terms of actually watching people and making sure they do their exercises properly, I'm... check up on them. I just don't enjoy it, to be honest. But I know that it's very vital. So you see, I'd rather refer out to physio or sports therapist or a Pilates class or something where they can go and do that work.
Yeah.
With someone that's their job, that's their joy, is to get that strengthening back in.
I only really say about the hostility, because I remember when I was studying at university, I was really good friends with the girl that was studying physio, and all of a sudden it was like they had a lesson on hating osteopaths, and she didn't like me anymore. Well, maybe it's just me, but...
Well, they had an actual lesson on how to hate
osteopaths. I swear, they must have done.
Overnight.
Because all of a sudden she just didn't like me anymore.
I think there's that. I think because we all do the same thing.
Yeah.
That people get.
I think like competition in some people's heads, and it's we shouldn't be competitive.
No. I mean, I was listening to a lecture, a webinar on hip pain, and the guy was a very well respected. I think he was NHS physio, and he was talking about deep hip and glute pain, and he suddenly said, and for no reason, you know. Now, don't listen to those chiropractors who will tell you that it's related to that SIJ, because it's got nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, why would you say that? Because it's not just chiropractic. And also, you're seriously telling me that, because you said something like, oh, people might have had, you know, the chiropractor will say they've had low-level back pain for years, and that'll be linked to their hip pain. There is no link.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, not everyone would say that, but I think that how can you say that something that's been going wrong in this area is not going to be linked to something 5-10 centimetres lower?
Yeah, definitely.
That just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's maybe that difference in thinking.
Yeah.
That make... Or
I think old, like, a lot of people's values as well from the past, I don't know, because we were quite... considered full of quacks and hippies, weren't we, 20 years ago, and I don't know if that's kind of plays into people's minds.
I think it does.
I think now that both our professions have got a lot of evidence behind what we do.
And also we're regulated.
Yeah,
I think
we're regulated, and I think people are starting to accept that we're...
Because have you got the
So we've got the General Osteopathic Council.
Yeah, and have you got the Osteopathy Act as well? I can't remember if you have that same as us.
The GEOSC, I think.
Yeah. So we have Chiropractors Act, so chiropractor is now a protected term. So you can't call yourself a chiropractor.
Yeah, the same
other. And that, I think in a way I can understand it from a GP's point of view or a physio or anyone's point of view pre that.
Yeah.
In that you had, anyone could have called themselves whatever.
Yeah.
And they had no idea of who's done what. Whereas, I mean, I think the Chiropractors Act, and I may get this wrong, I think it was 97, but I might be wrong on that. That it came out in or out, whichever way it goes. That's and since then it's protected term. And also I think it also meant that if someone referred to a chiropractor, they were no longer responsible. Then the chiropractor's responsible. So I don't know if you have the same thing.
Yeah.
But before I could imagine, I mean, I wouldn't refer to anyone myself if I continued to have responsibility over that patient under their care. Because why would you do that? You know, because. But yeah, I think now that we're more regulated and held to a higher professional standard.
Yeah, and if any patient is worried about the person they're seeing, I mean, our names are all on a register on the internet. So if you wanted to register, look at our, see if we actually are registered, then just type in our names on like the General Osteopathic Council or the GCC.
Yeah.
And then our names come up. So
they do. And you have to, we have to
just proves that we've done our actual training.
Yes, and also that we have good character.
Yes.
And and we have to do our continued professional development, as many people have to do. So I don't know. We have to do 30 hours a year. I don't know what you have to do.
30. Ours is changing now. So we're doing it over 3 years. So we have to do 90 hours over 3 years. Yeah,
I think ours might be doing that at some point.
And we have to do kind of certain amounts on consent and...
Oh, okay. It's just been
It's been more, slightly more regulated.
So we have to do 15 hours on our own and 15 hours for other people.
Yeah, same as
ours. Same. I think this year they're letting the whole GDPR thing come into us, into our... hours on our own, I believe. But that kind of stuff isn't difficult to do because you always find research articles that's interesting to have a little look up and that kind of thing. I've got a whole load on my save for later button.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Can't read it now. Kids are screaming. but that's quite a good way of doing it. And now that webinars and that are coming.
Yeah, webinars, great.
Yeah. Because you get someone who's really knowledgeable talking about something and you haven't got to leave your house.
Yeah. Sit in bed and do it.
And they're all with your chocolate.
Yeah. My Thai bar that will get me through an hour and a half.
And also because it's in the evening often, it's just easier than having to, I want to go and do one in Bournemouth in a few weeks and you've got to go to place.
Yeah.
Meant somewhere, but they are. I do enjoy it, the whole learning side. I think you have to have some sort of enjoyment of that, don't you?
I remember when I first graduated, I hated it because I was like, I've just done 4 years, I don't do any more. And now, actually, the last 2 years or so, I really enjoyed it.
I think because your brain gets tired, doesn't
it? Yeah, and I think I just wanted to get out and be an osteopath. And then, you know, it's 5 years on since I graduated now, so I'm actually starting to enjoy learning again.
Yeah, we were always told that 5 years you're at, you kind of like your peak because you have that kind of. A lot of the knowledge from university, but you've got some clinical experience. Whereas I'm in my 12th year.
Yeah.
13th year. I feel old. And obviously some things, I could have not forgotten, but they're somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Because you don't use them every day.
You get in habits, don't you? Like, I tend to use very similar techniques. And sometimes I just, like, I remember just when I was getting a bit nervous about coming back after maternity leave, I just went back through my old notes. I was like, oh yeah, I forgot about that technique. And one of my patients is training to be an osteopath at the moment, and when she's got her exam, she comes over and we go through techniques, and I'm learning loads of new techniques from her.
I just think there's always new things, new ways of doing things.
She's studying it at a different place to where I did,
and they have
different tutors.
I mean, for neck adjustments, I'm quite unusual. Most people just what's called head of table, so standing behind the head of the table. I don't know if you do necks like that.
Yeah, mostly.
Whereas I stand bedside,
so
I stand at the side of the front, facing the patient, it'd be like, which is quite unusual technique.
Yeah.
But that's because I've got very small hands.
Yeah.
And I can't hold people's heads.
Yeah.
With any degree of, because obviously when you're adjusting someone, you need a person to relax.
Yeah.
And if they don't feel that you can take the weight of their head, they're not going to relax.
And then people like, I do it and then stood up, for the patient stood up, because they still feel like they have an element of control.
Yeah.
So they relax more and then I can manipulate. So that's the thing, like we all do it different ways.
Exactly. And I go between doing adjustments for upper back, sort of doing what we call sort of double females, with your hands together that way, and then what we do call a cross bilateral, which is your hands crossing behind the back. So I go technical terms here if you're not chiropractic.
Yeah, a bit of Latin in there.
Yeah, but you just, and also you change, like, I had a wrist injury. I don't know if wrist injuries are common in osteopathy.
I don't see them much, but yeah. I do definitely, I get a few a year.
Yeah, I was carrying a wrist injury from adjusting, and so I had to change my techniques because I couldn't.
Oh, I mean, as in, we get them. Oh yeah, my hands were shot.
Yeah, and fun. It's the thing is, the soft tissue work, because I do quite a lot of soft tissue. Yeah, not all chiropractors do, but I find it really helps people stay better longer between treatments.
Yeah.
And yeah, but I tend to get, you know, my thumbs do ache at the end of a busy day.
Especially after being on holiday and I had a week off, that first day back, I'm like, ow.
I do tend to try and use my elbows
more. You lose your strength so quickly, that's why I need to get your glutes going.
Yes. Right.
On that note.
Excellent. Well, that's been really interesting, Mel. I've really enjoyed talking to you today.
Yeah,
and
too,
I think, as we said, osteopaths and chiropractors can be friends.
Yay.
We can work in the same building. And as I said, there's more between us that's similar than is different. So I think the answer is...
We just look at it differently.
But
slightly different techniques, but really...
Just see a good one. I think for the answer, whether it's an osteo or a chiro or a physio, and I think most good...
find someone that you have a good, you get you relax with, and that's the most important thing. And
go on word of mouth recommendation, or if you can't find anyone, phone them up and have a chat to them, because anyone who's worth their salt will talk to you on the phone for 20 minutes or whatever
before you come in. I might have a kid screaming in the background, but
But you know, we're mums, we can tune out children at any point. But anyway, excellent, lovely to have you on the show. Thank you so much for coming in, and thanks very much for listening. Goodbye. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to the Total Health Podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it. If you need any information or links from the show, they'll be in the show notes. And if you have enjoyed it and you're a regular listener, maybe you'd leave us a 5-star review. I'd be really grateful. Or perhaps you'd share it with a friend or subscribe so you can hear our future episodes. Thank you so much. Goodbye.